Welcome back to the Charlotte Angel Connection, the Charlotte area podcast linking entrepreneurs, investors, and the broader Charlotte community. As you know, our goal here is to interview the individuals who are building, shaping, and influencing entrepreneurship in the Charlotte region so you can stay invested in Charlotte's growth. Today, we're back at Packard Place with three founders from Class 7 of the QC FinTech Accelerator class, Jim with Cubics, Sheena with Capway, and then Nate and Christian are both with Coins with a Q. This is another two-part interview where I wanted to meet the founders early on in their time within the accelerator program so we could get their view and kind of get a sense of where they were in the first couple weeks. With Demo Day coming up on November 20th at Barings here in Charlotte, I thought it'd be great to put this podcast out there now so that we could hear their thoughts in September, and then we can go listen to them pitch just a few days later. Again, it's November 10th today, so we'll be able to hear them pitch in 10 more days. You know, from the interview, I think you'll come away with the same thing I came away with, which is all three of these companies are very well grounded. They know what they have ahead of them. It's certainly not an easy road. No startup road is an easy road. But they certainly seem ready and able to put the work to see it through. I think the mentorship that they're receiving from this conversation, the mentorship they're receiving seems to be improving at an exponential rate, and all the companies have bold ideas. So when you include great mentorship with bold ideas, you've got some really nice opportunities out there, I think. So take a listen to this week and next week for that matter, and then come hear their pitches on November 20th. So hope you enjoy.
I want to get started off just with a little bit of background on each company. And we're going to start off, we're going to go from my left to right. So we're going to go with Jim from Cubics, Sheena from Capway, Christian from Coins, and then Nate, who is also here with Coins. Jim, if you don't mind, just tell us a little bit about Cubics, what it is, and how you got it to where it is today.
Thank you very much. So Cubics is a platform with a single goal, and that is to make blockchain safe and viable for the enterprise. Currently, the versions of blockchain that are available in the public realm aren't really appropriate for enterprise deployment. We've kind of filled in the gaps, meaning that we provide a layer of encryption, we provide a very strong access control, and probably the best part is we provide a layer of interoperability among disparate versions of blockchain, which none of these things are currently available. And if you look at blockchain right now, it's in a what you would call a foundational build-out. So if you think about the early days of TCP/IP, that's where it is right now.
Okay. Yeah. So, awesome. Thank you. So, Sheena.
Capway. So Capway, we actually started in 2016 doing on-the-ground research. So Capway, we focus on the financial health of those who are underserved, mainly unbanked, underbanked, and the working poor. And we do a mixture of financial education with financial services. And we use that to work with them to get them more definitely financially healthy.
Okay. Thanks.
Welcome.
Christian.
So Coins, spelled with a Q. We help people pay off debt through everyday purchases with a focus on credit card debt and student loans. We did a beta in 2016, officially launched this year. And so far we've helped pay off over $500,000.
Awesome. Nate, add anything to it?
No, everything Christian said. Excited to kind of see our product come from beta to now live and see our traction.
Okay. Let's talk about, so, you know, obviously we're here at Packard Place, which means that we're here with the QC FinTech Accelerator Program. We'll go opposite direction. We'll start with Nate. What brought you to the QC FinTech Accelerator Program? In other words, why are you in Charlotte, and what do you hope to get out of it?
Yeah, so we definitely feel like QC FinTech is kind of the perfect accelerator for us. Obviously, there are other accelerators out there that are, you know, maybe more well-known per se, But one thing that we're really, really excited about is the connections within like the banking industry that we've already been able to start making in just the short time we've been here. These are doors that that necessarily wouldn't have been opened, you know, had we been somewhere else or stayed in Atlanta as opposed to come to Charlotte.
Yeah, kind of just follow up on that. I totally agree with what Nate said. I mean, we're literally in the same yard as, you know, majority of these financial institutions. So I can just go down the street, have meetings, have some coffee with these people. You know, if there are some issues that you know, we're having, you know, we're trying to find solutions for, I can just reach out to somebody and then have a meeting to figure out who's the right person to find a solution to that problem.
Sheena?
It doesn't hurt that Charlotte is the second largest banking hub. that played a huge part in it. When it comes to our audience, we know the audience pretty well, mainly, especially me and my co-founder from Mississippi.
Mm-hmm.
But having the opportunity to come where you can go have meetings with some of the largest financial institutions, you're around other people who are not necessarily in the same boat, but you can definitely learn from. It was a combination of those things that, you know, definitely made me want to be part of the QC FinTech.
Jim?
Well, this one is personally a little easy for me. I live here in Charlotte. So,
so you cheated.
I cheated a little bit. Yeah. I've known Dan and his efforts at Packard Place over the last decade. I've been in here a couple times.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that for us as a company, since blockchain is going to be transformative for the fintech sector, it was a perfect nexus. We've got we've got a number of individuals, as you guys have discussed, that we've been able to meet, we wouldn't have had access to. And certainly, given our play being B2B, it was really important that any accelerator that we participated in was one that we could focus on. FinTech and healthcare happened to be the two that we're very focused on, so it was a natural force here.
Okay. So each one of you have co-founders, and there's, you know, that's essentially like a marriage, right? So how did you stumble across your co-founder? Let's just start there. How did you stumble across your co-founder? And what do they bring that maybe you don't have?
Right.
What's the synergies?
Yeah. So we have four founders. One is joining me here at QC FinTech. That's Brendan Bennett, and he's based out of Park City, Utah. Anybody's welcome to join him if you want to go skiing in the wintertime. So. And then I have two founders in Bangalore, India, the CEO and the CTO of the company. That's Rakesh and Rajiv.
Okay.
So we're a little bit different in that we're all remote. I've got a background with Rakesh that stretches back over a decade, and we can talk about that another time. His relationship with Rajiv probably supersedes that. It was just kind of a nexus, all of us thinking about the same problems facing blockchain today. And that was really how we came together. We use a number of tools to stay connected. We're fond of saying that somebody's always working at Qbrix, doesn't matter what time of day it is. But the reality is, today, it's really easy to stay in touch and work collaboratively if you got the right tools, which we think we've put together.
Cool, thanks. Sheena.
I met my co-founder, Tim Lampkin, maybe about 5 years ago. It was when I first started my first startup. He used to co-manage a celebrity, actually. And I was going to use the celebrity to help promote one of my apps for my first company. And when we started talking, because he was like our co-manager, we realized we were both from Mississippi.
Yeah.
And we just stayed in touch ever since. And so he eventually left that not long after, actually. He started working at a bank, a CDFI bank.
Okay.
And
so real quick, CDFI?
Mainly community banks and credit unions.
Okay.
So smaller banks. And he started really falling in love with changing and helping rural America, people who are underserved. And we all stayed in touch. And he said, I love his passion behind it. And when Capway came about, and I really wanted to make a change from seeing people continue to have to participate in the predatory economy. It was the perfect fit for us to come together and push Capway forward.
Perfect. Christian,
Nate's
Nate.
Here, so
yeah, you can't talk bad about him, that's for sure. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Wait to hear this.
So Nate and I, we actually both went to Georgia State University. We actually didn't meet there. We met outside at a networking event. I worked at Atlanta Tech Village. I worked at Atlanta Tech Village at a previous startup, and that was about the time that I was working on starting coins. And my background was business administrations, so kind of the business side of things. Nate's technical side of things. So you complemented what I had to the table, what I was able to bring to the table. And so by meeting at a networking event, I think and having gone to Georgia State, those are some of the things that kind of we were able to relate to.
Fair enough. So what's been the experience so far with QC FinTech? What do you do on a day-to-day basis? How are they growing you? Where are they taking you? Because I know it's changed a lot over the course of the last 6 years. They've learned a lot, and I think the quality of the company that they've brought in has grown exponentially over that time period as well. So you come up here and drink coffee and sit around sofas all day long, or what are you doing, Nate?
So basically, week to week, they have quite a few events with, experts per se. Like for instance, yesterday we had a kind of like a roadshow training event where two of the previous founders from an earlier cohort who were really great at networking and kind of just working roadshows came in and just gave some great tips on that. So there's events with, great people week to week. Additionally, we have, bi-weekly advisory board meetings where we can sit down and kind of go over our business. And then we can set up our own meetings with mentors and advisors. And other than that, we're just kind of heads down working on our business.
Yeah, pretty much ping pong here once in a while.
Who's the class champion?
Well, Josh and I are going back and forth.
Fair enough.
I'll get back on top. But I think we all kind of work and then take that break and get some ping pong in, kind of just to refresh the mind. But other than that, it's, networking and trying to meet as many people and build that network, because you never know who you meet. So
you've been places already, right? As a class, Sheena, or no?
Not yet.
Not yet.
My first one is Venture Atlanta, which is next week.
Okay, so you're going next week.
Yes.
Okay. What's that like? We don't have any idea yet.
No clue, but we'll know next week.
Yeah. Y'all flying, taking the bus, driving?
Driving.
Okay.
We're carpooling.
Okay.
We're working together as one. That's a startup. See, it takes a village.
Yeah, that's right. So, Jim, living here, what's it like for you? Do you come up in the morning or leave at night? Or
pretty much all day. I have to take a break midday to let the dog out. So
it happens.
For the record, it happens. I find it really interesting because it keeps me in check. I go back home and I'll tell my wife about the fabulous day I had.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a multitasker. The next thing out of her mouth is, did you take the trash out?
Yeah.
So it keeps me humble.
Yep.
One thing I've tried to do, and I would hope if I was in any other town participating in an accelerator, the host, somebody that lived in that town would do the same. I've tried to be helpful to these guys and tell them where the good burgers are.
Yep.
Things like that. It's been a lot of fun, and I'm probably a little bit older than most of the cohorts, and I've been through a lot of the things that they're probably experiencing right now, and I try to give some advice. Whether they take it or not is another thing. It's been refreshing. As a company, it's allowed us to really test bed our message, our model, and being able to throw that up against executives that are currently in these institutions means everything, rather than talking to somebody that comes from the banking world and now they're strictly into investments. So we have a real world view of what the problems facing those companies are.
Jim, we'll stick with you for a second. Jamie Dimon's recently come out and spoken against more about bitcoins than blockchain. But what type of impact does that have, and how does being in Charlotte help, or is blockchain and Bitcoin further enough separated that it's not really a challenge that you're up against right now?
It's changing pretty quickly. 6 months ago, it was a challenge because the first question out of most investors' mouth is, so you guys are like Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Or even, you're another flavor of blockchain, so it took a little bit of education. What's happening now, that education's spread. A capitalist investors, or the first wave of blockchain over-exuberance has passed. A lot of those were based on business applications that aren't even around anymore. And the reason is because that foundation still has to be built. That again, the similarity to TCP/IP, there are going to be wonderful applications that people like Nathan and Christian will write in the future, but you can't do it on creaky architecture. So that's got to be in place, and that's really what Qubrix is right now, at that foundational level. So I'm somewhat envious of my fellow cohorts that they can throw an application up on the screen, and it looks great. The UI looks great. We're underlying technology. It's not quite as sexy.
Yeah.
In fact, in the end, if we're rarely mentioned, but we're part of the engine that drives blockchain, that'll make us thrilled.
Absolutely. So,
but to your point about Jamie Dimon, it was really addressing the area that we stay away from and that is filled with noise right now, and that is the Bitcoin or the public blockchain arena. He was really making a comment about Bitcoin in particular. Now, you know, I think it was discovered that they did actually buy Bitcoins for a particular customer.
Yes.
We don't even get into that discussion. What we're doing is totally focused on the enterprise, non-transactional in terms of cryptocurrency, but what other type of digital value needs to be stored, secured, and shared.
Okay.
That's kind of what we're focused on.
Sheena, speaking of challenges, the underserved community is been underserved for a long time, and people would say there's if it's been underserved for a long time, there's probably a reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
What are the challenges? So, you know, one of Jim's challenges obviously is people coming out against the blockchain technology or Bitcoin, but what are some of the challenges that you face as well as you move Capway forward from here?
There's challenges on both sides, from the business to business, or even speaking from the consumer side. So the consumer side, the biggest challenge is definitely mindset and behavior, without question. Because this is, we're speaking to a group who have, for the most part, been left outside of the traditional financial system. They don't trust it. And we're trying to say we're giving you a better option. The advantage we have to that is we look different than the average or what they're used to when mm-hmm. they think of banks. Whether that's because we're African American or just because we're young, you know,
yep.
they're usually used to seeing the old white guy.
Yeah.
And we're not that, you know,
yep.
we go speak to people, we have like on t-shirts sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's like, they're quicker to open up to give us information that I'm sure they wouldn't give, someone who came in with a banking, like collar shirt on.
Yeah.
That's one.
Yeah.
But
Jim's over there taking us, yeah.
Sorry, Jim.
Yeah.
But from the banking side, the challenges are, one, just about every financial institution has tried to capture this market. Because the truth is, the industry, the market's worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
And most of them have failed. So the question is, how can a group of 20-year-olds from Mississippi figure out the problem that this financial institution has billions of dollars
yeah.
and can't figure out? The second piece is the education piece. I think that people understand the problem, but they don't understand the people. So that's a really big challenge, just trying to educate other investors or other businesses on how or why Capway is a company to be able to capture a market that is not the easiest to capture. And, you know, we're very transparent and we know it's not easy, but I'm pretty confident that we found that sweet spot.
Yeah, makes sense. Christian and Nate, y'all serve Sheena and Capway is kind of underserved community. Y'all are helping people pay off debt. So they've been served, but maybe they haven't been served in the best manner, so to speak. What's the big challenge out there for you as you go from where you were to now helping people pay off, you said $500,000 worth of debt,
mm-hmm.
to $10 million worth of debt, right? What's the next challenge for y'all?
Well, yeah, so obviously as we're scaling, we're having our growing pains, and with those growing pains, we gotta kind of find the solutions to these problems very fast.
Yeah.
So like right now, like one of the things is, you know, moving from paper checks to electronic payments, something like that, finding solutions that can automate some of the processes. So that's kind of the big thing, but finding ways to build relationships, like deeper integrated relationships with the financial institutions to kind of facilitate those type of things. And also in regards to like the marketing aspect is finding the right partnerships with, you know, people in the space that can market to a larger audience rather than just going, like, you know, door to door.
I think additionally, like one thing like we've typically talked about too is kind of like expanding the ways that you can, you know, pay down your debt, you know, and I think one of the things Christian's been a really big advocate of the beginning, since the beginning, is allowing people to kind of like crowdfund their debt in a sense. So, you know, if, you know, Jack is a college student at X University and he has $30,000 worth of student loans, why can't we make it super simple for him to invite mom and dad into the app who can also, you know, contribute some great change towards his student loans, but by the time he graduates, you know, his interest is paid off or his principal is just so much lower than it typically would be.
I think the big thing for us is kind of finding that differentiator and getting us out that same box that people want to put us in.
Yeah.
When people say, oh, you just throw the roundup up, because we're not.
Yeah.
I think we're facilitating, that's a strategy that many people understand. And that's just kind of like the beachhead product that we can utilize to really get us off the ground, and from that, you know, building trust with our customers and then go on about finding other solutions to solve the same problem.
So you all are in a unique place, and probably every startup has a component of it. But you mentioned, or part of what you're up against is education, right? Education of why debt's bad, education of how to pay debt off. Sheena's education about why the banking system is actually beneficial and it's good to be part of it. And there's a boatload of stuff that goes behind it. And then blockchain, you know, you don't even have to say anything other than that. The education behind it is next to nothing. How do you go about educating a market that has yet to be educated? You know, what's your strategy for that education component? Or do you not, or are you not trying to educate, or are you just trying to win in a different way?
For us, because we start with millennials, we do a lot of things and we compare it, or we use pop culture to get our point across when it comes to our consumers. So an example would be in our financial feed, called our money feed. There's an article and it talks about the financial gems that Jay-Z dropped on his last album.
Okay.
So we try to make it so that it's not that boring type of financial talk.
Yeah.
And it also goes back to even more like our UI and our UX. You look at the app we have out now, it's our beta app, of course. But what we're moving from here is even our designing of our app or our website is almost designed as if it's like a Spotify or if it's like an Instagram. We design it and have make sure the user experience is not that of a traditional bank, but more so of a social entertainment type of platform that they use, that they're used to, they feel comfortable with. So it's even the way of the user experience is really big for us because of the mark. We want to make sure they feel very comfortable.
Yep.
The colors matter. The flow matters. The transparency matters. We make sure like words are big because our audience there, they use check cashing places to pay their lenders. So they feel like, well, at least that big neon sign told me that I'm going to pay $10 to go cash his check.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I didn't know I was going to end up having to pay $35 for this overdraft fee.
Yep.
So the transparency is big. So the UI UX is really huge for us. So it's not necessarily educating by saying 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
It's the way that we do things. It's the best educator.
Interesting. Fair enough.
For us, there's a few ways that we kind of try to go about educating. I think the biggest thing is behavioral economics, is understanding how people think.
Yep.
And the way people think and the way people act are two totally different things. The resources are out there to have people out of debt, but the debt just keeps increasing, right?
Yep.
And so what we first focus on is kind of like forcing them to build that habit. And once they see the value behind it, then they want to start building that habit on their own. But how do we go about, you know, helping them build that habit as well as, you know, creating content around or like content that's relevant like now. And so kind of to her point, like using like pop culture or just relevancy into what's going on around the world or like, you know, in your everyday life. Like my example I always use is like you're getting a cup of coffee. Almost everybody gets a cup of coffee. Or you go get gas. Like those are the type of things that people can relate to and understand. It just immediately makes sense. And not only that, but then also kind of like using ourselves as our brand. So like for me, like I try to just speak wherever I can, just kind of on our story, because people relate more to a person than a product more times than not. So if I can say, hey, I'm 24 years old, I'm in your shoes, I understand where you're coming from, I want to help you, but, you know, I'm also helping myself by doing this. People are like, wow, okay, like, I get it. That makes more sense, so, you know. So it's kind of using both hand in hand.
Absolutely. Jim, how do you go about educating people about blockchain?
Well, when you look at education, there's missionary work and there's hand-holding. And because this is a new technology, and I think there's enough historical data to show that every new technology has a curve to it. On the front end of that curve, which is where my partners and I are most comfortable playing, we're working with early entrants, those that have already been educated somewhat and are somewhat blockchain savvy, know what they want to do inside their organizations. This is the sad part of this business, is we don't have the time to spend doing the missionary work. We really don't. However, in the wonderful entrepreneurial world that we live in, that's getting niched out. So we've actually been approached by a couple of our mentors that have an idea to provide that education in seminar fashion, and specifically not to steer them towards our product, but to steer them to a better understanding of blockchain's impact in the enterprise. We couldn't ask for anything better than that. We just don't have the time as a small organization to go out. We do a lot of conferences where we speak,
yeah.
But short of that, it's basically block and tackling of getting the platform finished.
So you all answered that. I mean, you understood it right out of the gate, right? So, I mean, you understand your marketing message. You all demonstrate a very keen understanding of what your product is and what your product can do. And I know we kind of tackled this a little bit earlier, but I want to circle back around to it as we start to wrap up the first part of the interview. What are you getting out of QC FinTechs? I mean, you know your message. You know what needs to be done. You understand the product really well. What are you getting out of the accelerator program?
I'll take that first. Look, it's no surprise any of us are here to try and find a follow-on investment to whatever we've raised to this point. And not to put too fine a point on it, but the expertise for us of having executives participating in this program that are still involved with the organizations that we're trying to reach out to is extremely valuable. And,
do they open up doors? Are they opening up doors for you, Jim?
Oh, my gosh. Listen, it would have been easy, especially being here and watching the efforts previously. It would have been easy to come into this very, not arrogant, but, I've done this before. The truth is, I've learned so much in just a month, not only in getting the message fine-tuned, and look, there's still a lot of work to do on that, but the people that are showing genuine interest in what we're doing keeps us going. It gives you the gas, the ammunition to wake up another day and go at it, short of somebody showing you their commitment with an investment. So I think, and it's valuable information, there's no hidden agenda, and to see, it'd be easy for these advisors and mentors to just be on a list and not accessible. But I think all of us will say they've been really accessible to us. That's very, very gratifying.
Yeah, I think credibility and the network that we're establishing is, by bar none, like, probably the most valuable thing that we are and we'll get out of it. It's just being able to, one, meet the people that have the perspectives from different financial institutions on what you're building, and then you can get the feedback from them on, you know, how they, one, see regulations, two, see how things work, and three, like, obviously the target demographics that each of them have and how they would approach them. All that's, like, super, super important.
Can echo that. For me, it was really important, the opportunity to not only have access to the mentors that we've been able to meet. The two biggest questions that I always ask, usually when I meet with mentors, is give me, like, the bad side of it. I think when you build something, it becomes like your baby. You kind of become like tunnel vision in a way. And being able to speak to people that's also out in banking or in finance in some way, they can say, I've been through that. You're going to run into this problem, this problem, this problem. Or is someone, in our case, larger banks have tried this market and have failed. So outside of maybe having just a the branding being an issue in underserved markets. What are your other issues? I'm the type of person I learned very well not only from success stories, but I also learned very well from failure stories. So that's been something that's been really important here at being part of Queen City.
So fair enough. Let's take a quick break there, kind of wrap up. We go into second session. We covered a little bit about who you are, challenges, the benefits of the program. I want to talk about when you found out you were entrepreneurs or how you became entrepreneurs or what does it mean to be an entrepreneur, and kind of run down that path here in the second session. So thanks for hopping on board for the first 20, 25 minutes, and we'll circle back around in a few.
So again, a nice interview on the first go round with Jim, Sheena, Nate, and Christian. Certainly, again, I think you can tell they're high quality founders. You know, Sheena's had a turn already as a successful founder. Nate and Christian certainly seem to be well on their way, and then Jim's got the experience and expertise, I think, to push him along, him and his co-founders along the way. So, good group of co-founders. Would again encourage you to listen in next week to another edition of the Charlotte Angel Connection. And don't forget to go to www.qcfintech.co and register for either the Southeast Fintech Venture Conference and or just Demo Day. Both of them will be held at Barings downtown. Would certainly love to see you out there. Thanks so much. William Bissett is an investment advisor representative with Seacrest Blakey & Associates, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Seacrest Blakey & Associates. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Seacrest Blakey & Associates also does not offer legal or tax advice. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with the appropriate professional regarding your individual circumstance. Investments herein described may be speculative and may involve a substantial risk of loss. Interest may be offered only to persons who qualify as accredited investors under the Securities Act and a qualified purchaser as defined in Section 2A, 51A under the Company Act or an eligible employee of the management company. There generally is no public market for the interest. Prospective investors should particularly note that many factors affect performance, including changes in market conditions and interest rates, and other economic, political, or financial developments. Past performance is not and should not be construed as indicative of future results.